go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 123 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Now that I say all my nicknames and my real name, yeah, I'm starting to think right now, in this moment, if I was in a position where I had to sign the Declaration of Independence, I believe that was the year 1776 in Philadelphia. If I was one of those trailblazers who quit England, Britain, and came over here to the great US of A and, you know, declared independence, what signature would I do? Would I do my parent given name, Brian Michael Glass, but just Brian Glass? Or would I go towards my nicknames? Would it go B-Man or the People's Degenerate? And I don't know. Or would I use another pseudonym to hide my identity? I gotta admit, we're 123 episodes deep, and I put my real name, so it would be very difficult to hide my real identity. So I guess I'd have to go. I think I'd probably go with Brian Glass. All right, moving along. I mean, come on. We made enemies of Great Britain. We left them. The Redcoats, or were they the Bluecoats? Whoever they are, I am not turning. I have new enemies. The B-Man, Brian Glass, the People's Degenerate, needs to make, and I'm going to make them right now, episode 123. It is the parents of toddlers, 3 years or younger. I'm making enemies of you right now. Now, I will admit, I don't come into contact with many toddlers. I live a life of degeneracy, a life of, what's that fancy word? Hedonistic lifestyle. I drink, I spend late nights, stand-up comedy, smut, verbal graffiti. That's the lifestyle I live. And sometimes when I veer out during sunlight, I will come across a toddler, and I know the way I look. Like, I look like I'm kidnapping children, but I do not. I don't know if it's because of skinny, the frailness. I kind of have a perverted look to me. I enjoy the look, just the cuteness of children, but I understand, hey, oh, you're cute. Keep it moving along, because parents are very skeptical of me and my appearance, although I've never kept anybody. And I don't know. Everybody in my life, any people who I've come into contact with throughout my life, I don't know any child that's ever been kidnapped. And all I hear about on the internet is how everybody who is a globalist, an elitist, who is for open borders, all these organizations are kidnapping children from the wrong side of the tracks and sacrificing them for some satanic ritual. Maybe that's happening, but it's for my social circle, I don't think that's the case. Now, we talked about weeks earlier, previous episodes, about teachers having inappropriate relationships with students of theirs. Now, I do know more than a number, over five people. And then I know people who have had, intercourse with teachers or vice versa. So I know that happens quite frequently. But the kidnapping of children, I got to admit, like, I see a white van, I don't get scared. My first thought is, oh, are there children in the back of that? That is not, maybe it's happening. Maybe that's a blind spot to be, man. Maybe I need to get stronger prescription, real glasses. But that's not something. It's just not something that's present or that's noticeable in my life. Again, maybe I'm of a hermit. Anyway, back to your parents. There is a fashion trend on the internet that I'm noticing. Even though I don't see these toddlers in real life, I do see them on the internet because a lot of my friends, a lot of people in my life have children. And there is this trend of putting a bow, You have like the bandana, the head bandana, regardless of your sex, with the big bow that's like to the side. It's very reminiscent of 1990s West Coast rap with the bandana, where they put it backwards or to the side. Same thing with these toddlers' bows. Like you have the infant who's in her baby seat. Again, I'm not a parent. I don't know all the language, but they're in the seat and they're looking up at the camera and their head is tilted. And I believe it's because the bow is about like two sizes of their actual head. So it's making their head lean to the left or to the right, because babies, they don't have those neck muscles yet. So the bow is so large and so like it takes away from the baby. How can you look at a photo or a video or a story of a baby, of an infant with a bow that's about the size of her head that looks like a conjoined twin, right? Two heads together. And it's just, how can you not focus on the bow and not instead of the baby? Like the bow is so off-putting. It's so like if my parents did that to me, and when I was an infant, they put me on a headband with a bow all over the internet. Every day there was a new story with a different color bow. As an adult, I would try to I'd go to courts and try to disavow myself from my family. And all these infants are going to grow up and see these photos and they're going to look at their parents and say, "What the fuck were you thinking? I look like a damn fool with that stupid bow on." It's even more just that look you get when you see something foul. Sometimes you'll see a baby, or again, an infant who's wearing a helmet because maybe the head is a little misformed, so they have to wear that helmet. It helps their head get into more better shape. But when you see that on a toddler or a kid, then we all know, oh, yeah, that's just a medical condition. You have to wear the helmet, at least as an adult. We're not making fun of you. We're like, oh, that's, it's for your health. It's for your well-being. But when you see that bow, it's even more than the helmet that the babies have to wear with the misformed heads, with the, the Gumby-looking heads. When you just have a normal, not normal, but, a healthy, happy, giggly baby with that bow, that big red bow that's like larger than like the Chinese flag, and it's tilting their head to the left. It's almost it's a child cruelty. It's almost worse than a shaking baby syndrome. I want to message them on whatever, Instagram or Facebook, and go, "Hey, you're a terrible parent. Get that bow off your child. You're ruining his neck. He's going to walk around like this as an adult. He's going to be the hunchback of Notre Dame without the Notre Dame or the hunch. It's just going to be a neck to the side." And I look at that and I'm seeing it every single day on social media. You got to stop with the bows. You moms. And I know it's not the dads, so this is to the moms. Stop with the bow. You want to put a bow on your 2-year-old daughter, fine. Put a bow, like a normal size bow. Don't put a bow that is like the size, it almost looks like a hot air balloon on top of your baby's head. Just a little bow is fine. A little inch by inch bow, perfectly fine. But you have a bow that is like bigger than a bow tie that an adult, a nerd, a professor would wear. Tucker Carlson back in the day. Like you're a terrible parent. You're embarrassing your child. You're embarrassing your husband. You're embarrassing your family's name. You're embarrassing your ancestors. Take the bow off of your baby. Moving along. Found this one. Comes from the subreddit Red Bull. That would be the drink, that is. I need help, guys. Don't we all? Can someone please tell me which online store I can find Peach Red Bull that the taxes aren't ridiculous? Amazon is officially out. I haven't had one in a week and am withdrawing hard. That's all capital letters, hard. I've had this theory for a while now, a few years, that concerning energy drinks, and this is just, you know, I haven't conducted any study. This is just being out in life, the field, being out in the wild, and noticing things, noticing this with my eyes. And the theory goes like this. The larger the energy drink that a person is drinking, the worse off in life that person is doing. And this is very peculiar to me, the B-man. Because if you're drinking a large energy drink and not doing anything of substance with your life, why do you need 24 ounces of jet fuel to get you through the day when you have nothing to do? I swear, 40 years on this planet, and I am yet to see a 20-ounce Red Bull in the cup holder of a Mercedes or any luxury vehicle for that matter. Now, it is successful people in life who dabble beyond coffee, and they need the energy drink. They usually drink those little nips, those 5-hour energy drinks. They'll do that. Or they'll do the regular 8-ounce sugar-free Red Bull. I believe that's the light blue can. But if you're veering into the 16-ounce Monster energy drink or higher ounces, you're getting to a point. You're veering to a territory where you might not see your penis ever again. Because if you're drinking 24-ounce energy drinks every day, it's going to expand your belly. And you're never going to see your private parts ever again if you do that day after day, week after week, year after year. People who drink Red Bull every day, like more than one, it's an addiction. Like, it is an addiction. We should, as a society, take it seriously. There really isn't much of a difference between a Red Bull addiction and a meth addiction. Because they both end up, the meth addict and the Red Bull addict end up in the same spot in life, predicament in life. The only difference is the meth addict gets there much quicker than the Red Bull addict. But I put the over under at 2.5. If you're drinking 3 Red Bulls or energy drink for that matter, daily or more, you are an addict of Red Bull and energy drinks in general. If you're drinking 3 or more energy drinks a day, your family should immediately have an intervention on your behalf. That is, if your family is able to open your bedroom door that's being guarded or being blocked by those 24-ounce green can Red Bulls that you hoarded from Costco's. Because anyone who drinks Red Bull, they got boxes of them in their bedroom. If you're drinking that much Red Bull, you got a problem, and you will end up living in a tent beside the railroad with all the other meth addicts, and you'll all be, the only thing you'll be able to eat is a beef jerky, and you'll have to nibble it really slowly because you only have 4 usable teeth because the Red Bull, that yellow poison, has just put permanent tartar all over your other teeth, and you'll barely be able to chew. Really, the only difference between a meth addict and a Red Bull addict, other than the time it takes to get to that tent by the railroad, is the Red Bull addict has to pay taxes on his substance of choice, that being the Red Bull. Like, at least the meth addict can just make his own meth in his backyard. And the only risk is, it might blow up and kill him. But I was on the Red Bull subreddit, and I guess it's springtime, so there are all these addicts of Red Bull that are clamoring for the spring edition pink cans of Red Bull. Right? I guess they're all out of stock, so there are people on the Red Bull subreddit who are literally putting posts like, "Oh, I scored the spring edition Red Bull," and That's all you gotta know. Like, if you're using the word "score" for whatever substance you're getting, you have a problem. You have an addiction. And I looked it up. For a 24-pack of Red Bull at Costco, $60. If you're spending $60 on a 24-pack of Red Bull, that means you're probably drinking at least two of those a month, maybe upwards of four or more. So let's say you're spending $200 a month on Red Bull. How can you look the B-man in the eyes and tell me you don't have a problem? You don't have an addiction to Red Bull? Honestly, if you're spending $200 a month on your Red Bull consumption, you deserve to have to live the rest of your days in an old folks home and not have your offspring come and visit you. Honestly, if you can't control your urge to pour that red and yellow poison down your gullet, like, I shouldn't have to subsidize your daily insulin injection. Like you should have to pay for that, not the B-man. Not the B-man who does burpees 4 or 5 days a week. It's just I saw this video a while back on YouTube where a guy, he poured just a regular Red Bull, just no flavor, just a regular one, poured it onto a windshield, and the windshield shattered, just shattered into like a million pieces. So if the Red Bull does that to a windshield, what the fuck does it do to your insides? It must make your insides into Chernobyl, toxic, radioactive. Like, I learned that. I grew up, I'm fortunate enough to be man that I grew up drinking. I grew up drinking Kool-Aid, and I learned post puberty, probably in my early 20s, that when you're drinking a drink that you decipher by its color, that drink is not good for your health or your long-term prosperity. And all of us who grew up in the 90s, we know, and we'll tell you to your face, that purple Kool-Aid was the drink to fuck with. There was no drink better than purple Kool-Aid, maybe other than Ecto Cooler, but purple Kool-Aid was legit. But again, I learned very early, hey, man, you get, stop fucking with those colored weird drinks with ingredients. Drink water, drink milk, 100% juice if you can find it, or alcohol. But I'm leery of all the Red Bull drinkers out there. I'm leery of you, and I'm liable to, I'm like, if I see two people drinking Red Bulls in large cans or Monster or any type of energy drink, like, and I'm crossing the street. I'm prejudging you, and I want nothing to do with you. So I'm gonna cross the street and go on my merry way, because I don't trust your addiction. You might be in a bad way, and you might try to mug me. So that's why I need to cross the street. Let's go look at some photos. Two nights ago, I was out as Brian Glass, not the B-man. I was my real person. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, because now I have something to talk about, I had an encounter with a name dropper. And I don't understand why he was name dropping to me. I have nothing to give this name dropper. I have no money. I have no stature. I have no real estate. I have no ladies. I have no yachts. I barely have a personality. I didn't even buy him a drink. PBRs at this place were $4 and I think 59 cents, which fucking is infuriating. If you're going to have a cheap beer, have it be a full dollar, not and change. Because if I don't use a credit card, because I don't know what the credit card minimum is, I got one PBR, $4, I don't know, 57 cents. I pay with cash because a lot of places, a lot of pubs, dive bars, they have a credit card minimum. And if it's $10, that means I got to buy more than one PBR. And I didn't want to drink and drive. So I'm like, hey, I just want to have one paid. And he gave me change back. And I'm like, well, do I give him the change as a tip? But I gave him $2 as a tip for one beer, which I believe is sufficient in my heart. I believe that is true. But does the bartender think I'm a cheapo because I didn't give him the change back? Everybody can use a quarter. Penny? Yeah, fuck it. Take the penny. But the quarter? Yeah, you can use that for the gumball machine or the scratch off the, you know, to use the scratch off ticket. There is use. You can get out a quarter. But the penny? Get rid of it. But anyway, back, I was at this dive bar, this on the corner stool by myself, not the regular side of the bar stools, the non-regular, non-alcoholic side. Just by my lonesome, two ladies came in. They were celebrating someone's birthday. They're from California. They sat next to me, started making conversation. I'm talking to one of the ladies. The other lady's talking to the couple on the side of us. Again, nothing. It was just a conversation. It was night. It was just a conversation, friendly, where you're from. It really wasn't anything stimulating. Somehow I had mentioned I went to UConn. The guy came up to me. And this guy, he was a portly fellow, short, a shaved head, black. I say that, I don't know why. Why I said, does that make me racist? Maybe I am. I don't know. I'm trying to describe the guy to you. He was short, portly. He was strong, but he had a beer belly, had a pot belly, and he didn't wear it well. But he wasn't fat. It was, I lift weights, but I got a beer belly and I drink 7 White Claws alone at a dive bar at night, kind of vibe to him. But he was strong, but fat, short, and he had a UConn football, the dry fit shirt on. Okay. But yeah, and then, you went to UConn? I'm like, yeah, I went to UConn. Which isn't a big deal because I was in Connecticut. So going to UConn when you live in Connecticut or have graduated from there, it's not, wow. It's not like, wow, MIT. No, it's like, it's kind of like every other third person's been there. And then he starts name dropping. Like, oh, yeah, I work for the football team. Tomorrow's the spring football game. Okay, are you the head coach? No. Are you the strength coach? No. Then the B-man don't give a fuck. Because those are the only two interesting people who work for the football team that I'm interested in. It's those two. The head coach, the strength coach, and also just the hot floozies who hand out the water bottles on the sideline during the game. But he clearly wasn't that either. So I'm talking to him, and then he just starts name-dropping. He's like, yeah, I know everybody. I know the... He started naming the highest NIL givers to the school of UConn, and he was telling me how much they give. I think one guy gave $3 million, and maybe another guy gave $30 million. And then he started mentioning how he lived on the Upper East Side of New York City in the 90s, and how he was one of only 5 black men that lived on the Upper West Side during the 90s. It was him, P. Diddy, which he seemed to be proud that he knew P. Diddy, which is a little weird. A little weird. I think you can all agree with me there. And then he named 3 other black guys that I was not aware of. And then he started talking about all the players that he knew at UConn. And I had mentioned, he said, oh, yeah, I know Rudy Gay. And I know Rudy Gay. I was at UConn when he was there. If you don't know, he's a great basketball player who had the best. Rudy Gay might have had the best NBA career of all time, made nearly $200 million, and never played a game of significance throughout his whole career. That is the dream. The dream. Rudy Gay, good for you. And then he showed me a photo of him and Rudy Gay, and he was showing me all these photos of UConn legends and all these... He was telling me about all these parties and these events that he goes to, and that he knows all these high big wig power brokers within the college football system. And I was like, dude, I'm like, okay, Why are you telling me that? Like, if you're going to be a name dropper, fine, fine. It is off-putting. But if you are a name dropper, drop the names on somebody that can do something for you. Because the B-man, I did nothing for this man. I appeased his conversation, and then I peaced out. And I didn't even check to see what happened with the spring game for UConn the next day. Clearly, this guy was hungover for it. But if you're going to be a name dropper, like, don't be a name dropper slut. Like, don't drop those names on everybody. Like, find the people to drop those names on where you can pull in their bucket and get something from them. So that's my word of advice for all you name droppers out there. Don't be dropping names on me, because I'm the B-man. There's hardly any name you can drop on me that would make me go, oh, wow, tell me more. There are very few, and the only few they are porn stars and or comedians. So, yeah, big deal. Oh, you work for the UConn football team. Hope UConn does well this year or next season. All right. This next one I found on Reddit comes from the subreddit Casual Conversation. That kind of feels like what we're doing right now. That conversation I had with the name dropper last night, anything but. He did not ask me anything about myself. He just, other than, oh, I go to UConn, he used that information to have a 25-minute conversation that was one way. All right. Enough about me and the name dropper. On to this guy's plight. Again, Casual Conversation subreddit. I realized something about my apartment, and now I can't stop thinking about it as I check to make sure my recording is on. I've been living alone for a while now. I was so proud of myself figuring everything out. Budgeting, cooking, being an adult, all that. But today I had a horrifying realization. Do tell. I was standing in my kitchen, staring at a bag of shredded cheese in my fridge, when I suddenly thought, wait, how long have I had this? And that's when it hit me. I have absolutely no concept of food expiration dates. Growing up, my parents just magically made old food disappear before I even had to think about it. Now I live alone, and I feel like I'm playing a game of will this kill me every time I open my fridge. Anyway, I just ate a yogurt that Best Buy said last week, pray for me. I pray for you, we will. Okay, moving forward. I just said a prayer for you. Hopefully you're still alive. I'm not going to point my finger at you. Today, I threw out a seasoning bottle of cinnamon. I threw it out. My mother asked me, why did you throw out that cinnamon? And I told her the expiration date was 2023. It's now 2025. Seemed to me, hey, throw it out. She chastised me for doing so, said the expiration date for cinnamon does not matter. And she looked it up on the internet, and apparently she is correct. So all those seasonings that have the expiration dates don't mean shit. You can keep them. It won't make you sick. The flavor might be not as intense, but it won't do any funny business in your stomach. I have a very similar lifestyle to you. It took me a very long time to be able to afford my own apartment, and I get it. You go there, you're thrilled, right? You're finally there. You did what you thought at one point or most of your life was impossible. You got your own place, and you got the curtains with the blinds. You got all the kitchen seasoning. You got a full-size bed, and you got a frame underneath it. You got yourself a Swiffer, cleaning supplies. You got it all. You got the whole apartment set up. You look like an adult. You even have internet. Maybe your sister had to help you install it. But you got internet. You got utilities. And you think, life is good. I am now an adult. But then you look at the shredded cheese. And you realize that the shredded cheese that you brought into your apartment might be the Trojan horse that tears apart your studio apartment empire. And this is not your fault. This is all a result of Big Dairy. Big Dairy is out to get all of us single guys who live in apartments by ourselves. They know. The Big Dairy knows that most of us don't have the balls, the cojones, to go against the expiration date that's stamped on the side of the milk or the shredded cheese or whatever dairy product it is you have. We don't. You buy a quart of 1% milk on Monday. The expiration date is Friday. Friday comes. You've only drank half the milk. Like Big Milk, Big Dairy, they know that milk, as long as it's refrigerated, is probably good for another 20 days. But they put the expiration date before it needs to be. So when Friday comes, you'll dump the milk down the drain and go to your corner convenience store and buy another quart of 1% milk. Big Dairy is eradicating the middle class of America $6 at a time. They know exactly what they're up to. And I don't like it. I don't like it. You don't like it. None of us should like it. But again, none of us have the balls or the vagina lips to go against that expiration date on the side. What do you do? What do you do with that shredded cheese? You know, the expiration date was 3 days ago. You want to make yourself a homemade burrito? What do you do with that cheese? You got to use all five senses. We all know this, right? For the first, even if you're a milk drinker that is a product of a broken home and your parents were alcoholics and passed you back and forth and used you against each other to try to get ahead, even these milk drinkers know the very first thing you do, you do the smell test. You use your sense of smell. You take a few whiffs of the milk or the cheese, and if it smells like a twat that has the semen of multiple men inside of it, you take that shredded cheese and you throw it on your neighbor's garden and you go to the convenience store and get yourself some new cheese and or milk or whatever dairy product. That's the first thing you do. Everybody knows that. And then secondly, you gotta use your eyes. You gotta use your sight and you gotta act as though you're a racist. And what I mean by that is, you only fuck with things that are entirely white and smooth. And you look at that cheese, if there's any fur that's growing on it or mold or green or brown or some super soft spots, you don't fuck with it, right? You don't fuck with anything that's green or brown or it has hair growing on it or that's clumped together. But if it's white and smooth, fuck with it. Eat it all you want. Expiration date 2 weeks ago? Fuck the expiration date. Eat what you want. And that's really the only way you can go about, it's the only way you can go about deciding whether to eat the shredded cheese or not. It's just, you got to use your senses, all of them, and trust your body and what your senses are telling you. And don't worry. Don't worry. Like maybe you will die at the hands of a polio string cheese. It might happen. You know, better men have died worse ways. But just know that your adulthood and the year we're in now, 2025, if it's not the polio string cheese that's going to fuck up your adulthood, it's going to be somebody, right? It's going to be, maybe it's your Jewish landowner. Maybe... Maybe it's big pharma. Maybe it's your employer. You're gonna get kicked off your job and be replaced with an Indian or AI. Or maybe it's an insurance company. Or maybe you get in a serious car accident. Whatever it is, within the next 5 years, like somebody is gonna ruin your adulthood, and you're gonna have to go back and live with your parents, or some hostel or some shelter. Like your adulthood is going to get ruined by Big Dairy or by somebody. So enjoy your adulthood while you have it now. Let's continue reading "A Salesman's Wife" by John Lawrence. We are now on the top of page 117. We will read two pages aloud together. As I burp right there. I'm coming, Pamela cried in delight. I'm coming, oh God, God. Her loins were throbbing with galvantic delight as she hungrily drank in the two men's gushing cum, while her cuntal walls convulsed feverishly, exuding their warm, feminine secretions. The combination was staggering. The young wife thought she would explore from the brutal, incredible force of it. And then, after a long time, it began to fade. The throbbing drumbeats diminished and finally disappeared. Exhausted and delighted, Carlsberg emptied himself and slowly eased back on the bed, withdrawing his softening rod from the stretched and inflamed rear passage. Garrett still continued to come, however, moaning incoherently as he squeezed every last drop of his masculinity in her clutching pussy while Pamela with and mewled in ecstasy. Finally, he too felt his climax ebbing away and pulled away from her, lying back on the bed, luxuriantly satisfied. Pamela was bathed in radiant warmth, and the two men withdrew. She felt cool air waft pleasantly over her body. She began to sigh deeply, utterly drained, but completely happy. She didn't care about her body ached and throbbed from the brutal, well beyond that, to a world sensuality that was like a dream of untold rapture. Moments later, completely exhausted from both the sex and the drug and the wine, she fell into a blissful sleep. Noting this, both Carlsberg and Garrett chuckled to themselves and began to dress. Moments later, they were in the hall outside the elegant bedroom where they met Mavis. "Well?" she asked, with her eyebrows arched quizzically. "How was it?" "Delightful," Garrett replied with a devilish grin. "Absolutely delightful." You're quite a man, son," Carlsberg remarked. "You've got a real way with the ladies." "Thanks, Dad," he replied proudly. "Well," Mavis said, "why not? After all, you know what they say, like father, like son." Break. Pamela returned home that night. She had become troubled despite her overwhelming experience. She was concerned about the moment during the torrid fucking she was receiving from both doctor and his assistant when Carlsberg cried out, "Yes, son," in obscene encouragement. At first, she thought it was her mind playing tricks on her. When the doctor awakened from her deep sleep, she had intended to mention it, but felt foolish and silly. So she said nothing, assuming she was imagining things. Yet, the more she thought about it, the more the idea disturbed her. If it was his son, then the awful possibility that she had been fooled from the start and that the so-called love therapy was nothing more than a fake, a deception. Yet her mind could scarcely comprehend such a horrible idea. She had already paid the doctor over $300 for her visits, barely realizing how she would explain such a huge expense to Alan. She had hoped when he realized how liberated she had become that he would not mind the payments, but now the possibility loomed that she had made a dreadful mistake and compromised herself disastrously in a den of sexual degradation. Her mind stormed with conflict as she nervously prepared dinner for herself. Finally, she decided to return to the old mansion early the next day before Alan returned and confront the doctor directly. She had to know the truth, no matter how terrible it might be. Go suck a fat one.